Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/AcrossAmerica.
Up to four lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Are the Pacers getting screwed because they're in a small market? That's what their coach is alleging. Hey, welcome to the show, Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff. Knicks beat the Pacers last night. They take a 2-0 lead in this series, Perloff, but it was all sour grapes after the game from head coach Rick Carlisle. It's been two games with questionable calls, but to be honest, the officiating has just been awful throughout the entire NBA playoffs, no matter which conference, no matter which series. It's been questionable, and he blamed the small market. Let's hear from the coach and how he thinks they're getting the short end of the stick.
Small market teams deserve an equal shot. They deserve a fair shot. No matter where they're playing. I'm always talking to our guys about not making it about the officials. But we deserve a fair shot, you know, and there's not a consistent balance, and that's disappointing.
I like Ricardo here because he's trying desperately to work the officials here to get something in game three. I mean, the last night was absurd. The calls were so bad for a stretch in I think it was the third quarter where they started calling the whistle on the Pacers on everything and nothing on the Knicks. So it was even worse in game one to me. And Carlisle later said, if you go to Twitter, you can see all the calls. I think he's referring to my feed, actually.
Is that right?
And
oh, that's by, you.
I think Rick follows me, which is sad because I killed him for not putting TJ McConnell back in the game. But regardless, this small market idea is just absurd, though, because let's look at some of the NBA champions of yore. The Denver Nuggets last year, 17 size market. Golden State, they're pretty big, 10th. Then Milwaukee's 38th market. The Lakers, big one. Toronto Raptors, that's not a big market. Cleveland Cavaliers, that's not big. So they have not been, if they've been having conspiracy to help the big markets, they're doing a terrible job at said conspiracy, yeah. Maggie, because obviously small market teams have a shot. They've been winning the title year in and year out.
Yeah, this one, I agree with you. This is Carlisle working the refs. This is pent up, I think, from game one now to game two. And it falls a little flat for the coach, considering you got a couple of breaks that did go your way last night. And the breaks were that Jalen Brunson left the game for the entire second quarter and was dealing with a foot injury. OG Anunoby also had to leave the game. He's got a hamstring issue for the Knicks. So add that on top of Julius Randle's out and Bogdan Bogdanovic is out and Mitchell Robinson is out. I mean, these are the kinds of things you have to make go your way. And they got a good game from Tyrese Halliburton last night after he was garbage in game one. He was great last night. And
for parts of the game, that was a weak, weak effort for him in the third quarter.
Okay, I'll give you that third quarter and some of the free throws. Okay, but he actually showed up and had, 34 points last night or something. So you got what you wanted to. The other guys, you know, the Miles Turners and those dudes didn't show up on the road last night. So you're not going to get, like, you might look at the Knicks and go, who are a lot of these guys? These are not the superstars of the league, but they're a good team that plays together, and the effort is always there.
Yeah.
So when you get a little sliver of the door cracked open where they suffer two injuries last night. That's on the Pacers to bring it home. That's not the referee's fault. That's not league conspiracies. That's the Pacers' fault.
Yeah, no, the Pacers, they don't seem to really be interested in closing out on anybody's three. I don't totally get their rotation. I got to admit, I didn't study the Pacers all season long. I don't understand why some of their bench players aren't playing more. I don't think I'm alone in that one. You know, the one thing about the tight rotation.
Yeah, with Tom Thibodeau.
Yeah, I mean, you're playing, what, 6-7 guys now? But you do have the three officials on your side, too. So that's actually 8 guys.
Well, so that's the bench is the officials in this game.
It was tough. It was just really tough last night. There was one play where a Pacers guy came in, and Hartenstein got credit for the block. He mugged the body of the player. Then somebody else hit his arm. And the announcers, who I don't know what game they're watching, was like, what a great block by Hartenstein. He barely got any ball. And I thought the broadcasters should be calling out the officiating more, too. But they were everybody seemed to be caught up in the hysteria of Madison Square Garden, Reggie Miller being there last night. Nobody was noticing that the officials just did not know what to do. They were totally lost.
I know, but here's the thing. And you're right about that. And we've called out the officiating because this is so odd that the NBA would literally change the officiating tact in the middle of the season. Now, they obviously were desperate, right? The All-Star game was a disaster. It's embarrassing to have games be 150 to 147 regulation games. Right. We're not even talking about overtime games. And I think they were embarrassed, and definitely Silver clearly ordered the code red.
Yeah.
You have to swallow the whistle. Don't give any into any cheap fouls. Now, they're not perfect with that, but everyone's flying blind here. Like from one crew to the next, from big things to small things, it is just a problem. And so I feel for Carlisle after game one and even some questionable calls last night, but you can't blame the small market, big market when the officiating's been bad all across the board. It seems silly. It's unbecoming of someone of his stature, a Hall of Fame coach, future Hall of Fame coach, and he seems desperate here.
Well, there is a line, though, where the officiating is so embarrassing that you can't say it's being applied equally to everybody. And I think couple calls they crossed the line last night. There was an offensive foul. So they're letting all physicality go, but if Miles Turner just kind of brushes his hand by somebody, it's a foul. It doesn't make any sense. They're not doing it consistently.
Yep.
That's what's going to burn them. And this doesn't matter. The second round. Wait till the finals. There's going to be a crucial late minute call. You're right. They need a consistent level of physicality. What are they allowing? They need to be clear about it. And so far, they're not. It'll be interesting, too, because you had a great point. The physical teams like the Knicks and the Timberwolves, maybe the Thunder, they're going to get through to the finals. So then you're going to have two physical teams going against each other, which is going to be even harder to officiate and less consistent.
All right. So we're getting called out here on our geography in the chat. If you want to watch the show, youtube.com/InfinitySportsNet, twitch.tv/InfinitySportsNetwork. Toronto, largest city in Canada. Not a big market. That's Delta. To Louis says, large in population or square miles. we did not say.
You know, I'm looking at a list from Sports Media Watch of market sizes. Yeah. I did my homework on there. They didn't put Toronto in here.
Oh, man.
They gave me everything. I was actually surprised that Denver is bigger than Miami. Who knew that? Mm-hmm. There you go.
Didn't know that.
But they're clearly not helping the big market teams, because why wouldn't we have the Knicks Lakers every year or any year?
Well, the teams also have to be good, and the Knicks have not held up that end of the bargain until recently.
Maggie, you worked at the NBA. I need you to go on the record here. Is there any chance that they are really having a conspiracy? Adam Silver is sitting in a boardroom like, how do we get the Knicks in here? I put it out on Twitter. I was half joking. They don't really have this conspiracy. What's happening is more subtle. It's officials being influenced by the home court.
Yeah, I think that happens everywhere. No, I don't think there's some big conspiracy to get the Knicks into the finals. But I do think that we talk about this in the NFL a lot. You know, the league's better when so-and-so is good. You know, like the NFL's better when the Raiders are good. The NFL's better when, you know, I think, you know, when the Browns are good. Yeah. And, you know, you have some of these teams. I think the NBA is better when the Knicks are good. I don't think that's being biased. We live here in New York, but I don't confuse me for any big having a lot of Knicks love. I do think that they like it. I think they like the celebrities showing up to the games. And in L.A., the same. But they like the celebrities showing up to the games. They love showcasing Madison Square Garden on TV. It's just one of those things.
But why does the NFL not have any concern with that? They're getting Kansas City is a very, very small market for a pro team. and they're dominating the ratings right now. It doesn't seem like the NFL has any connection to market size.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the NFL, it's Patrick Mahomes is not just a star, but he plays in this really exciting style. And yeah, even they got a boost from Taylor Swift. So, you know, the celebrities do help. Brought in a whole new audience.
That might be true, but the year before, they were already starting to challenge the Cowboys as the most rated team. And Dallas is actually a pretty big market, but that's not why they're so popular. It's the national thing. The NFL seems to transcend that mark. So
Star will, like the Warriors.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Is it possible that Anthony Edwards becomes the face of the league and then he rates? Because Cleveland, hey, everyone was tuning in to LeBron when he was in Cleveland. Nobody cared about how big the market size. So I think that you're right. I do think that they like New York being good, but I think a superstar can save them. Like a small market superstar will get huge ratings. Yeah. If Anthony Edwards wins the title this year and goes to the Olympics and kicks butt, the Timberwolves are going to start to get ratings.
Listen, Kevin Garnett was definitely a huge star in Minnesota.
Yeah, but he didn't win a title there.
Because they couldn't do anything.
He's also a big man. I think Anthony Edwards being the high flyer is going to really help. Being sort of the heir apparent to Jordan as a guy who could win the dunk contest and be the best player. And let's be honest, he's American. Different than Jokic or Doncic. I think he could be maybe the savior ratings-wise. I do think the Knicks, if the Knicks are in the finals, the NBA would be happy. But if you're just going to talk ratings, a Boston Thunder series is not going to do it.
Ah, well, we'll all find out, right? Adrian is in Maryland. Hey, Adrian, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. How you doing today? My thing about this reffing thing, the Knicks play hard. I don't care what you say. The refs aren't giving them the game. I love the way they play. Brunson is unbelievable this year. But the NBA set themselves up for this because they wanted the eyes, they wanted the views during the season. So teams are scoring 120, 130. And now when you get to the playoffs, you see teams barely getting to 100 points.
Mm-hmm.
And people are saying, oh, it's the refs. The refs are making bad calls at bad times. But this is how it should have been called during the whole season.
Yeah.
So that's my thought. It's not the refs. It's just they're calling the correct way now.
Well,
is that correct?
Are they, though, Adrian? So here's I like this better. I'll agree with you because I hated the cheap Harden calls. And watching Harden go to the line 25 times or Dwayne Wade go to the line 25 times even back in the day, I thought was so boring. But, Adrian, here's the thing. The NBA does this thing where they send out a two-minute report the day after a game. And they'll admit, like they did after game one, that they got four calls wrong in the final minute of the game. So what are you supposed to do as a fan there? Because you're watching in real time when all these bananas wild calls are happening, and some are overturned, some are not overturned, and then the next day we get the autopsy report, and it's like, oh, yeah, they were stabbed. It's like, oh, well, thank you for that. We all watched it on national TV.
And I agree with you 100%. That two-minute thing, they shouldn't even send it out because then you get the teams all riled up, you get the fans all riled up. Oh, we lost the game because of the refs. And Indiana's had double-digit leads both games, and they lost it. Brunson went out for a whole quarter last night. They still lost. OG went out for the fourth quarter. Brunson took over.
Won the game. The Pacers had it's weak last night to blame the refs. I think it's pent up from game one. But it's weak last night to blame the refs when you got the door cracked open with those injuries and you couldn't close it out. Adrian, thank you so much for the call, dude. Good to hear from you.
Yeah. I have a little bit, I think, against the grain take on last night. By the way, I think the Knicks might have won without Jalen Brunson, too, because the Pacers' defense crumbled so hard in the third quarter. It had nothing to do with Brunson. What was the run? It was some insane run where all of a sudden the Pacers just don't have any want to on defense. They do not want to close out. Miles Turner barely runs the floor, does not try to block shots as guys come in. They are just a mess. Honestly, they got to change up their personnel, Maggie, because those guys are not playing hard defense. It's not fun to watch.
They were outscored 36-18 in the third quarter, and that was Jalen Brunson, who missed the whole second quarter with a foot injury, played all 12 minutes of that quarter.
But then
they scored 10 points.
Yeah, I mean, 10 points, but obviously everybody else was hitting all their shots, too. Here's the question. Was it a Willis Reed type inspiration, or was it just because Brunson was out there? I think it was a Pacers meltdown. And they let up 27 points in the second quarter when Brunson wasn't there. Who was scoring those points for the Knicks?
Isaiah Hartenstein.
OG was scoring all the points.
It was OG and Anobi, and then he got
and
hurt.
And DiVincenzo got hot there, yeah. too. I mean, the Pacers have a problem.
Let's go to Charlie. He's in Vancouver. Hey, Charlie, what's up?
Hey, guys. I have so much respect for you, but Mags, I think you're way off on this one. When we talk about the NBA having something to do with it, how can they have anything to do with the injuries? And Perloff, you're talking about Pacers should have shut the door in the third quarter. You talked about how they got screwed on every single call. I mean, I can say I have a lead, but if you put my hands behind my back, yes, but I am going to screw up.
Yeah.
I am going to suck. I'm going to, and I have so much respect for Rick Carlisle. I thought he did a good job. I think he's wrong on big market, small market. I think he's right if he would say it's a story. And stories draw ratings.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter about how many people are watching the game. Like, the story I'm talking about now, the NBA, I don't think, doesn't have – they can't love a seven-foot guy from another country being the face of the NBA, winning so many championships. And I think there's a bigger thing if they can hand it off to Anthony Edwards and the style that Minnesota is. I'm not saying that they 100% influence it, but, man, I mean, and I know basketball. I coached high school basketball for 25 years. And there is no way that those games were evenly reffed. And that's all you ask for. You talk about sucking. Yeah, they suck, but they suck one way in those games.
Yeah.
And that's just brutal. And it makes it unfun to watch. It makes it look more like you're watching a movie that you know the ending of rather than just a basketball game. And it
so,
just
you, so wait, Charlie,
me.
Just to be clear on this, you do think that there is either conscious or subconscious of, like, bias that wants the Knicks and their story or Anthony Edwards and his story to advance?
Absolutely. And I'm not saying they're going to decide it all the way, but boy, damn, it sure looks like it. I mean, I'm not a Nuggets fan, but when I watched the guy setting the screen and he just threw over the another guy and just walked over him, I think it was Jamal Murray, and Barkley's going, that's a foul. And he's right. And Shaq's going, no, it's not. It is. Grow up. Well, dude, when you're
good Shaq impersonation.
It was brutal. Anyway, thanks for the time. Thanks for letting me bet.
Yeah, Charlie, have yourself a good day. Listen, he's right about storylines and stars. I just, again, last night I can't get behind it because the Pacers had every opportunity and they just couldn't, they couldn't win the game. That's not the Knicks' fault.
Listen, officials and the NBA, they have eyes. There are going to be so many makeup calls in Game 3. I'm betting a lot on the Pacers. They must know that this is not a good look.
How did your did you ever make the bet last night on Jalen
Oh, did I make
Brunson?
The bet? And thank God he was out the second quarter. 37.5 was the over-under on Jalen Brunson. I'm like, they have to. They can't put Nembhard on him again. They're never going to do this. They are going to make other Knicks beat them. So Brunson goes out the second quarter and still almost gets to 30.
I know. So Perloff was yesterday just basically begging EJ and I to get in on this bet with him about Jalen Brunson under 37.5 points scored, right? He's like, this is a lock. This is a lock. And it ended up cashing, so good for you.
Out of pure luck.
Out of pure luck. It has nothing to do with your betting prowess. It was only because he suffered a foot injury.
I know.
But I think that Perloff might be on to something with some of these NBA bets, guys. Yeah. If you're paying attention, Perloff is subtly nailing these NBA playoff bets. I think you should start giving out like a bet a day or something.
No. But then they'll go bad. But what else? I have the T-Wolves at plus 170 in that series, but... you know, Dave Portnoy Barstool put $100,000 on that. That is a good bet that the T-Wolves would beat the Nuggets. I'm looking at my bet history.
Way to go out on a limb.
No. He put it before the series. Now they're big minus money. Maggie, I'm looking at my draft history. Loss, 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 loss. I only share the wins. Don't you know how this works?
Uh-huh.
Don't you know? But
one of those wins he shared was the Knicks beating the Sixers, which was purely an emotional hedge.
Honestly, we did.
You still owe me $5 for that.
I gotta tell you, we did NFL picks this fall, and I came out just barely on top. And you know what saved me? Betting against the Eagles the last quarter of the season. I've had a lot of success betting against Philadelphia teams. Is that's wrong? Right? That's terrible. I feel embarrassed about that.
Will Smith is shaking his head right now.
Oh, that's who you got?
Yeah, I was gonna say.
Meek Mill can judge me. Will Smith cannot.
855-212-4227. All right, we got so into the playoffs right there that we have neglected the multiverse. We do that every Thursday at this time. We will get to that. We got a doozy for you. Sports greatest what ifs and what could have beens. We bring that to you next. Don't move. It's Maggie Pearl.
Let's get right into it. This week's multiverse is a question that I think has been on NBA fans for a long, long time. What if Kobe Bryant and Shaquille O'Neal had not feuded and stayed together in Los Angeles? What would have happened? Let's start with you, Maggie. What do you think?
All right. If Kobe and Shaq never break up, how is the world and the NBA totally different? Kobe and Shaq played together for 8 seasons and obviously won 3 titles together. And how I think the world is different is I think they win 6, 7, maybe 8. Who knows? The sky's the limit for how many titles they could have won. They were so dominant during that run that they become the dynasty that's right on par with the Chicago Bulls. And so what happens with that? You know, Shaq, I think, was going to start tailing down a little bit because of, you know, his physical stature and all that stuff maybe starting to decline. And I think Kobe would have continued to rise. So if Kobe and Shaq stay together and win all these titles in this multiverse, I believe that we are talking about Kobe Bryant in the GOAT conversation. We are talking about him right there with Michael Jordan because the rings would have been so on par. And on top of that, you have LeBron James now getting pushed down the list because if he would be fighting the ghost of Jordan and he'd be fighting against Kobe in terms of who's the greatest. And Kobe would be at the top of that pyramid also. So I think LeBron James's legacy would take a hit. Kobe's would obviously have gone up because I think he would have gotten the majority of credit when all said and done for the dynasty.
Okay, in this scenario, how long is Shaq hanging out in L.A.?
I think they have to be all together, right, for the whole time.
Shaq retired officially in 2011.
Right, so and Kobe won his last title in the 2009-2010 season.
Okay, so at least through that era.
Yep.
Okay, I'm going the exact opposite. Not only does Kobe and Shaq not win again, Kobe does not get those 2 last rings because Shaq is sitting there holding the team back. There's no Pau Gasol coming in 2008 if Shaq is there. Let me just read a couple scores to you here, Maggie. In 2004, the Lakers scored in the finals against the Pistons 87 points in game one. They scored 99 in one game two, then 80, 68, 60, then they scored in the 70s. They had nothing in that Detroit series. They were headed downhill so fast. There's no way they were keeping this together. Shaq's scoring fell off completely after that year. He never had a dominant Shaq year again. How were they winning the title? They were headed south anyway, regardless of the feud. They were not staying together, and Shaq was going to get reinvented. I know Kobe played really well, but Shaq would have held them back because I think to incorporate Shaq into that offense would have held Kobe back from basketball standpoint. There's no way they were winning another title.
No, I think, so this is the multiverse of Maggie and Perloff. We're discussing what if Kobe and Shaq had stayed together instead of breaking up. So the reason why is I think a couple things. Maybe I know Phil Jackson ended up leaving.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
But they ran into a Pistons team that was like one of the awesome defensive teams of all time. And they were doing, the Lakers went the wrong way in signing the Gary Payton, Karl Malone, and the ring chasing stuff. I think they would have. Kobe clearly steps to the front as the number one A, and I think that you're not getting Gary Payton and Karl Malone. I think that was more of a Shaq influence about why those guys even got to LA. And I don't think that Kobe would have had a say. You'll remember going back through history, I believe that those guys were signed after Kobe was dealing with all the stuff in Colorado with the rape accusations. So it was definitely would have been Kobe's team, and I think he would have had to say over personnel, and I don't think they would have gotten so old so fast.
Yeah, but if Kobe was getting so good, why did they stink after Shaq left?
And nobody around him.
Exactly. So they would have had a declining Shaq. They would have gotten worse if Shaq had stayed around. I mean, I think there's no way to argue that they're a better team if Shaq sticks around to 2011.
Can I give you another tentacle of the multiverse here? Again, multiverse of Maggie and Perloff. What if Shaq and Kobe had stayed together? You're not getting a Spurs dynasty in my multiverse, right?
So why? The Spurs almost beat them when they were at the height of their powers. You don't think that they could have knocked off that Lakers team?
I think that they end up stiff-arming the Spurs, and the Spurs, instead of being remembered as, you know, basically a dynasty, a mini-dynasty, I think that the Spurs become more like the Portland Trail Blazers, the New York Knicks of the 90s, teams that we know were good but never broke through in a big, big way because there was somebody standing in their way. And I think it would have been Kobe and Shaq.
When? I don't understand. I mean, the Spurs won 99. They get that one.
Yeah, okay, so that one they'll get.
2003 they get because Kobe and Shaq were together. Then, so you're saying in 05 the Lakers would have knocked them out. I think the Spurs were so close to them anyway that they were going to get the 05 and 07. And then 2014 is a different conversation. So they were, I don't think the Spurs were so close to the Kobe Shaq Lakers anyway. And that's when Shaq was at the height of his powers. A little bit of declined Shaq, and they would have had no problem with him.
Yeah, I mean, listen, Shaq did go on to win another title. Now, Dwayne Wade was the focal point there. So you had a little bit of a proof of concept. If you have a younger guy who's peaking at the right time, it's not like Shaq's a total zero. He can still contribute to a championship team. And the Heat are proof of that.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think this worked out the way it had to for Kobe. That's all I would say, because they needed to clear out Shaq and get Gasol and Lamar Odom and all those guys in there. And it worked out great, and it could really be Kobe's team. I'm not sure it's really Kobe's team if Shaq is still there in a way.
That's fair.
Yeah.
He
was
such a larger-than-life guy.
It's an interesting vibe. I understand what you're saying. And I just worry Shaq declined pretty quickly right around then. I love this idea. I think we maybe focused too much on the breakup, because I'm not sure, but Shaq just didn't keep it going. Maybe, by the way, if they get along better, maybe Kobe inspires him to stay in better shape, gets a few more years of dominant Shaq. That'd be interesting. I would have liked it. It would have been fun. But this idea that they would have rewritten NBA history together, I think is fan fiction.
855-212-4227. So that's the multiverse of Maggie and Perloff. What would have happened if Kobe and Shaq had never broken up? I see a much rosier outlook for the Lakers. Perloff, not so sure.
Yeah, I think it hurts Kobe long-term. I think Shaq would have held that dude back.
I mean, let's not pretend like it was all roses for Kobe. I mean, he basically had to threaten to go to the Clippers so they would get Pau Gasol. Talking about Smush Parker. And
I thought it was the Bulls trade. Which one? Did he also threaten to go? I can't even remember. Kobe was so mad.
Yeah. Did we forget any tentacles there, EJ?
Well, I think the Spurs revisionist history, I think, on Perloff is not great. Those Lakers teams smoked the Spurs. Smoked them. 3-1 in those series. Once they swept them, once they beat them in 5, and that 0-14 that was washed that we keep talking about, they still lost that series 4-2. So I don't know if the Spurs, like those Spurs teams did not match up well with the Lakers. They beat them in 0-3, and I think that was because the Lakers weren't winning 4 in a row. Like that train was going to come down at some point. But I think the Spurs, I think there is a situation where maybe they don't get as many rings as we see. I don't know if they get none, but they did not match up well with those Lakers.
I mean, they would have gotten 99.
They got 0-3. I mean, we can't. So that's three that they're. Yes. So you're saying.
They at one point, they lost not 8 out of 9 games against the Lakers in the playoffs.
I was saying, like, maybe they go from 5-3, but they definitely got 3 that have nothing to do with this multiverse. 0-3 specifically, Kobe and Shaq were still together.
Yeah, so right. That is the multiverse of Maggie and Perloff. What if, what could have been, what happens if Kobe and Shaq stay together? Dexter Henry is here. He's got headlines for us. Hi.
Yeah, hey, how you doing? In this verse, we've got Caitlin Clark. She's back on the hardwood tonight. Clark will make her Indiana Fever home debut in a preseason game against the Atlanta Dream. And the game was moved up a day early because game 3 of the Knicks versus Pacers series scheduled for Friday night at Gainbridge Fieldhouse. Now, the Fever, they're going to open up the third deck of their home arena rather than having seating only in the lower two decks. The change means that Indiana could draw more than 17,000 fans. So, guys, will we see a sellout at Gainbridge Fieldhouse tonight for a WNBA preseason game?
Ooh, I don't know. If I could get on a plane and go there, I would.
Preseason, Mike, yeah,
I'll bet that it's pretty close. I will say sellout.
You're going to go sellout. Okay.
What about the Fever, the tickets for the home opener? It's May 14th, right? Next week?
Yes.
It's here, right?
That's the Liberty home opener, which is against the Fever.
Oh, that's on the 19th. So the Fever have a home game before they come to New
correct.
York.
Okay. Their first game of the season is on next Tuesday at home.
Do you guys mind, looking this up? What's the ticket price for that Fever home opener, the regular season? I'm dying to know. What else you got, Dex?
All right, guys, remember last week when the Pacers bounced the Bucks out of the playoffs? Wasn't that long ago? Milwaukee guard Patrick Beverley, he hurled a basketball not once but twice at Indiana fans toward the end of his team's first round Game 6 loss at Gainbridge Fieldhouse, which we just talked about. Well, now, for that incident, Beverly is currently under police investigation. A spokesperson for the Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department told TMZ Sports that officers did end up taking a case report on May 2nd. The report has since been forwarded to detectives who are now trying to gain access to more video from the arena, as well as interview the involved parties. The NBA has not yet announced a punishment for the Milwaukee guard. So what kind of punishment, if any, should Beverly face?
Well, he should definitely face suspension. I mean, who knows what team he's going to be on next year. But
yeah, he's not signed with the Bucks. I mean, is he a free agent?
The guy's been on one-year deals.
He's a free agent.
That's a tricky part of this. How do you suspend a free agent who may not make an NBA team?
I don't know. Maybe whatever their version of the commissioner's exempt list is. But the other part of this is, so nothing meaningful is going to happen to Patrick Beverly here. Let's call it. It's not going to jail. Like, nothing's happening here. This helps him. Like, this helps his podcast and like all the attention that Patrick Beverly wants. You're just handing it to him. I'm not saying you shouldn't take the police report and stuff like that, but like, he loves this. He's an agitator. It's his whole reputation as an agitator. And I think this is like, gives him something to talk about in his pod.
Yeah,
it's,
I mean,
like, so lame.
Maggie, does anybody care about him as an agitator if he's no longer in the league?
We only care about this part of Patrick Beverly. Nobody cares about whether he can help a team win at all.
I mean, listen, fighting a fan is, Charles Barkley threw a guy through a window, and he's the most popular broadcaster in the country. Like, this is not going to kill your career. The one thing, like, how hard is that police investigation? We all saw the video. I can investigate that. You don't need a top-notch police guy. So, yeah, I agree with Maggie. I think this is ironically going to help him. He's going to become, like, sort of the bad boy of sports media.
Imagine that police report where it says, oh, yes, Brian Anderson on the call last night said that Patrick Beverly threw a basketball. And video evidence from TNT shows a ball being thrown in the stands in the right corner of the arena.
Or it could be like, did some Instagram users have it too? Like,
yeah.
Like, Tall Bill has this Instagram clip. Yeah, this is a
real deep investigation, guys.
Did the person he threw the ball get hurt at all? I actually don't know what happened on the other
end.
I
mean, the woman that got hit in the head, I couldn't tell she got hurt, but I mean, it definitely hurt in the moment. She definitely was dazed. The guy, he seemed a little more ready for it, but he was old. He was like, he looked like he could have been in his 70s.
Is there anything on the back of your ticket? Like, you go to a baseball game, and they try to tell you on the back of your ticket, if you get hit by a ball or bat or something, like, you can't sue us. I don't know if anything like that exists on the back of a basketball ticket. If our shooting guard pops you in the head with a basketball, we are not liable.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Not sure about that.
Lawyers of America, unite. Going to need a little bit more fine print.
Lawyer up, Pat Bev. We're coming for
lawyer
you.
Lawyer up. He should do that. All right, guys. So the Pacers, well, we know this with Rick Carlisle, they're really salty about how their series is going with the Knicks, especially the officiating. According to ESPN, Indiana submitted 78 plays that they felt went against them incorrectly during games 1 and 2 against the Knicks. After his team's game 2 loss on Wednesday night, Rick Carlisle spoke to the media and said Indy has identified 29 questionable calls from game 1. The Pacers then identified 49 such plays from game 2 and submitted them overnight to the NBA office. So
49?
Yeah, 49 from game 2. Are the Pacers doing too much here?
No, I mean, some of them were so obvious that they have to send.
How many of the 49?
Well, the push on Halliburton was obvious. The offensive foul call, Miles Turner, that everyone made fun of, where Jalen Brunson flopped, that was obvious. And then there was this foul that people are not paying enough attention to, where Miles Turner may or may not have put his hand barely on Isaiah Hartenstein's side. There were three huge, egregious ones.
Wait, but what happens here? So basically,
they were terrible calls.
You got some intern to compile this stuff to send it to another intern now at the league who's going to get all this stuff in their inbox and do what with it? You're
the
not going to.
Answer is nothing.
Well, you're not going to redo the games.
The answer is not nothing. The answer is it's going to be Isaiah Hartenstein. Is going to be he climbs over everyone's back on every offensive rebound. They're going to start calling.
Gosh.
Well,
Josh Hart is running around like a free safety. At a certain point, they're going to call that stuff too.
You know, I was thinking Josh Hart really could play in the NFL. He's the guy that Austin Rivers is talking about.
Cam Chancellor.
Yeah, he talks about it. He says, I think I could play. He said that multiple times throughout the season that he views himself as a defensive back.
Yeah, we're all picking up on that.
The funny thing about the Knicks, too, is like what Jalen Brunson does, I swear to God, when I used to play basketball, that was an offensive foul. He just runs down and rams his shoulder into the defender every time. But they don't call that in the NBA. How is that legal? Why is that legal? EJ always yells at me for this. I'm like, he's clearly fending off. Either he rams his head into the guy's stomach, rams his shoulder into the guy's stomach, or rams his elbow into the guy's groin.
Well, the guy's not in legal guarding position, so if he's not going to take a charge, then you got to just play on.
Yeah.
I think that's simple.
Guy could play in the NFL, too. Jalen Brunson is, I can't remember a more physical point guard ever.
He's very strong.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that.
I mean, he almost kind of reminds me, Sam Cassell used to like bully smaller guards too.
But that I think all this like that, the Knicks physicality is really hard to understand. I think that's where the Pacers
hard to understand.
Yeah, I mean for the officials, like it's really hard because Jalen Brunson's always initiating contact. I think it's a really hard game to officiate. Maggie, former softball umpire, I think you'd be really stymied with this one. I've officiated basketball games intramural in college. Every call was an anticipation call. A guy would go up. I'd blow the whistle even before the hit. All right, boom, you're out. I'm like, I didn't even touch him. Too bad. I already blew the whistle. It's, what is done is done.
Perloff, the Scott Foster of the Rec League at Dartmouth.
It's really hard to officiate in real time.
No, sounds like you had a lot of questionable calls there.
Oh, they were terrible.
I get it, but the $12 an hour you were getting paid, slightly different than what these NBA refs. I mean, can we not expect any kind of... This is supposed to be the creme de la creme, and it's not even the regular season where even you get some wonky referees. This is supposed to only be the best people, and they don't know what the heck's going on. The kickball, not a kickball, who's off what? They can't figure anything out.
Well, you think refereeing at college intramurals is bad. Try refereeing at a summer basketball camp after the kids just had a bunch of, Kool-Aid and stuff, and they're doing an afternoon games. Try to ref those kids at 10 and 11 years old. I did that for 2 or 3 summers.
I tell you guys a story. I was a softball umpire, and I blew a call at third base because there weren't a lot of calls made at third, and I was just so excited I was actually going to get to make a call. I Leslie Nielsen this thing and punched a girl out like, you're out, just really sold the call.
Yeah.
Safe by 15 feet. Chaos. Yeah, everyone's, the bench is cleared, the dugout's cleared, like coach is screaming in my face, put the girl back at third. And got everything settled down. And then I'm going to my car. I'm 17 years old, going back to my Volkswagen. And the coach followed me to my car.
Oh,
screaming at me. I started crying.
Now.
It was bad.
How about call your own fouls? What do we think about that? Let's
call your own fouls? Like
yeah. Games would be 5 hours long.
I think the Knicks pay. Well, I don't know. He's like, I was down at the courts the other day working on the jump shot. Back in the lab, Dexter, no big deal. And three courts over, I heard screaming at each other. I actually thought violence was, I got a little nervous because guys were screaming over a bad call. That's what they should do. The Pacers and Knicks should make their own calls, then fight it out like real men in a pickup game.
You got to remember this from playing pickup, right?
Yeah.
You know when the game was tight and you're playing and somebody's up 2 or up 1, nobody wants to lose, and then somebody goes to the hoop and they're just going to call foul every time because they don't want to lose possession.
Yeah.
That's what we would see. Yeah, EJ, you know exactly what I'm talking about there.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that's what we would see.
Getting very negative flashbacks.
And that's how those arguments break out. It's usually over situations like that.
The
NBA has wanted the curb fighting. You want to increase fighting in the NBA? Make the players call their own fouls.
Yeah.
And watch what happens.
I was going to say, then someone gets to leave the arena, go get their cousin, come back, also fight. Yeah. Like, let's really just play this whole thing out.
And could we be honest? If there was a Knicks-Pacers fight, that would not be pretty for the Pacers.
I mean, Pacers-Pistons fight once upon a time.
Yeah, that was many years ago.
I was about to say, yes, you're right, but, Pacers got that assassin on the bench.
Oh, who's that?
James Johnson.
He's
the dude with the... Nobody knows it because he's wearing like these long blonde dreads. He looks nothing like he's ever looked in his entire career. But he's on that bench, and every time I look over there, I'm like, oof. The Pacers want to change the series. Throw him in there for a couple of minutes, and maybe this won't be a physical.
They should have him take a couple fouls.
But I mean, that guy is a legit, like, trained MMA type. Yes. Like, he can hurt people.
Also, I mean, they play everyone else on the bench. Why not him?
I know. They're playing like 11 guys. Deep. Right.
What else we got next? Actually, we don't have any time for anything else. No.
Hold that to the next one.
Kick that to the next hour, and we'll get back to those updates. Meanwhile, we have a major question for one of the top draft picks from the NFL draft. We'll attempt to answer that next. It's Maggie and Perloff. Don't move. Welcome back. Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff. We'll get back to hoops in a minute, but we got to pause on the second overall pick from the NFL draft, Perloff, and that is Jaden Daniels, the reigning Heisman Trophy winner out of LSU. He was on a podcast called All Facts, No Breaks, and was asked about whether or not he'll be starting week one.
I mean, I'm confident in my abilities, but if that's a decision that they got to make, that's a bug.
And I ain't asked you, stop.
That's,
man,
a, that's a decision.
Do you, as the number two pick in the draft, anticipate starting?
I mean,
or you think they're going to be bring you along slowly, so to speak?
From what I heard, they say whenever I'm ready, I'm ready.
There you go. That's Keyshawn Johnson, who you heard there, too, in the All Facts, No Breaks podcast.
Keyshawn Johnson has a podcast called All Facts, No Breaks? This sounds awesome.
Yeah, there you go. So, Jaden Daniels starting week one, Perloff.
Yeah, oh, my God. If there's anybody... I mean, Caleb and Jaden 1 and 2, but Jaden's a sure thing because he's going to turn 24 this year. He's not 21 years old. He's been playing football a long time. He's ready to go.
Well, Michael Penix is probably going to turn 25 soon.
Yeah, and
he's
going to
sit for 2 years.
He should be starting. I don't know if, by the way, with Kirk Cousins coming off an Achilles, we'll see if Michael Penix sits for 2 years. That being said, Jaden Daniels is so ready because he's got the safety valve of being able to run. You watched him play last year. He's such a mature passer, too. So his game is so ready for the NFL. I can't see any excuse for him not being out there. And the team is kind of built to help him out, too. They have a lot of shorthanded receivers. This is the easy no-brainer start in week one.
Yeah, so he's going to start because his backup's Marcus Mariota. And that's, and I know we have a lot of fans in Oregon, but this is, he's, Marcus Mariota's not a starter now, right? Marcus Mariota is definitely a backup. And I don't, even as a bridge, I don't think that works. So I think they kind of told you without telling you when they were kind of unserious about signing a true like backup who could push the starter. So I do think he is going to start. But I don't see that the Commanders have all this pressure year one to make this thing work where, you know, I get it, you have a new ownership group and you want to erase the stench from Daniel Snyder, but you have Dan Quinn, new head coach, you got Cliff Kingsbury in as your offensive coordinator, you know, you're in the NFC East. Like, I think people are going to give you a minute here with Jaden Daniels. I don't see this as a pressure-packed situation for the Washington Commanders. I think if they wanted to build this thing the right way and if they wanted to bring Jaden Daniels along slowly, they have the room to do that.
Yeah, but I don't think they need to. There's no reason to. He's super old, first of all. But also, this is so set up, he's going to be able to hit immediately. So he's third in Rookie of the Year odds. Caleb Williams is number one. Marvin Harrison Jr. is number two. And then Jaden, I'm putting money on Jaden. Because look at how they basically, it's the RG3 rookie year all over again. Mm. In the sense that we're only worried about him being injured. He is unbelievably fast for a quarterback. So he's going to have the running. But look at his weapons. He's got Austin Eckler, who's automatic 700 yards. Boom, just like that. Terry McLaurin, so super solid. Jahan Dotson, I love their draft pick of Luke McCaffrey. He's going to be a little slot receiver. I think that this is all set up for a very productive rookie year. Not necessarily a big, I agree, there's no pressure to win, but he's going to have a great chance to put up very, very good numbers for a rookie. I think, and the expectations for the rookies are always lower. I think he's going to have 3,800 yards passing, 900 yards rushing at minimum. They win 7 games. That's a great year, I think.
Well, and listen, things are setting up kind of well for them, just the fact that the NFC East plays the AFC South. So you are getting those Carolina Panthers. You know, you are going to get maybe some of the, I want to say, easier teams. Nothing's easy in the NFL, but you are getting a little bit of a break there potentially with the NFC South that has been called the easiest division, right? The smallest strength of schedule. How would you say that? The weakest strength of all the division. So you do get that. Now you also have to play the AFC North. So good luck to you on
this. Yeah, that's the thing, though. You don't have to win. So just develop the quarterback. I mean, honestly, I agree with everything you said. There's no way, Mariota. But I think Jaden Daniels is an instant hit. I don't see I don't see how this doesn't work, which means it might not work because it's never a no-brainer like that. But, man, he sure seems set up. Kingsbury is the perfect OC for him. The big issue is Washington. They really need to improve their defense. They were terrible last year on that side of the ball.
You're hoping Dan Quinn brought over a couple guys from the Cowboys. So who do you think is actually going to sit and watch and learn from the top six quarterbacks who are taken in the first 12 picks of the draft? I mean, the Falcons are telling you that it's going to be Kirk Cousins. So you'd have to say Michael Penix is probably going to be the one sitting. Is he the only guy who's going to sit?
I think Drake May sits. I think Jacoby.
For how long?
I'd give it 8 weeks. Seven weeks.
I almost want to show bet you on this one.
Yeah.
Because I just feel like I have seen this before. For as many times as you get, Patrick Mahomes who gets to sit, these owners and front office, they can't help themselves. They're so excited about the pick. They have so much conviction in what they're doing. They want to get the fan base excited, and they end up throwing the rookie out there, even if it's a bad idea.
There's zero chance I'm show betting you on this one. Does that mean I have to put all my eggs in the Jacoby Brissett Patriots basket? I want no part of that smoke, Maggie.
So J.J. McCarthy, can he beat out Sam Darnold? I think he's definitely going to beat out Sam Darnold.
Well, that's another potential. I think he seems very polished. He's a little younger. But J.J. McCarthy, we've already seen mature J.J. McCarthy. We know what J.J. McCarthy can do. Not much, but he is what he is. They might as well throw him out. Yeah, I'm very confident in him. What about Bo Nix?
He's going to beat out Zach Wilson. I mean, yes.
Isn't Stidham still there?
I guess Stidham. I think these guys have these shiny toys of these new quarterbacks, and they're so eager to show us how right they are with getting these this new signal callers, and I think they throw them out.
Yeah, also, these guys are old. I mean, Bo Nix is... I mean, there are a lot of... He's older than a lot of veterans in the league already. So I think he's older. He's definitely older than... Is he older than Fields? I mean, like, these guys are mature. They're ready to go. So that's one thing. If you draft a 25-year-old quarterback, everyone's saying that's a bad idea. At least you get a guy who's mature and is going to be able to play for that 5-year window, which I know you're a proponent of. Don't waste that window.
You got to start capitalizing on that before the contract gets really, really big for the quarterback. And then you're really painted, into a corner. Coming up, is Rick Carlisle right? And the Pacers are getting screwed because they're a small market over the big bad Knicks. Get to that next. Don't move. It's Maggie and Perloff.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.